Welcome to this episode of The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend Rick from Blind, and today I have the pleasure of introducing you to Mark Dixon, the founder and CEO of IWG. Now, Mark Dixon might not need an introduction. He's one of Europe's best-known entrepreneurs. You see, Mark founded Regis, now known as IWG, in Brussels in 1989. After seeing local business people regularly conducting meetings around the small tables of local coffee shops in town. He founded the company with the express purpose of providing convenient, comfortable, and accessible workplaces, and now they're the world's number one workspace provider, covering every continent and time zone across the globe. Now, let's get things started, Jack.
What made you start up this company? Because it's really interesting to see how you went from like building this whole sector and starting it pretty much from scratch for a worldwide entity, which is amazing. So how did this all get started?
Look, it all started because, I mean, this was my 10th business. I'd done a whole series of other businesses which I'd built up and sold. You know, I started when I was 16 years old with my first business, and I sort of ended up looking for offices and found it was a very, let's call it, complicated experience. Wasn't very customer friendly, and I felt there was a better way. There could be a better way. That why was it that you couldn't buy support for your business as a product? You know, why wasn't you had to put it together? And, you know, my background before was either in construction or in factory production or in food production, things like this. And generally speaking, in those markets, you're, you know, creating products that people buy. You don't sort of just, you know, create things that people have to put together. So I could see an opening in the market. And that was me looking for an office. So then I researched more, came up with the idea, wrote a business plan, got started using my own cash. I mean, there was no, I didn't raise any money. And I opened the first center in Brussels in September 1989. And the rest is a long history after that. You know, it's not, the sort of journey's not been a flat one since.
Now, did this, you know, taking office space, making it co-working, did anyone do this before you, or you're the first guy who's made this happen?
First one to do it on any scale, in any scale. Before, there were people doing bits, things like it. It was, you know, this, you know, basically sharing of office space, basic sharing has been happening around since Roman times. I mean, you can find even in, you know, Roman Europe, they had the equivalent of what we do today. I mean, didn't have phones or the internet, but it was just sharing a space. It was an efficient way to do things. And in those days, property was a very high cost, very difficult commodity. It wasn't something that was sort of everywhere. So it had to be used very efficiently. And the same today, actually, driven more by cost and by the environment and so on. It's become quite a costly commodity again and quite difficult to use. Again, our job was simply to make it as easy as possible to use it wherever you need it, as opposed to it's all in one place. And that was the big change. That was my business plan, was to open up originally across the capitals of Europe and, you know, that to make it easy to do business in the then, just the beginnings of the European Union in 89.
Now, did it take off right away, or were people initially, you know, concerned, like, this, I'm not used to this. What's going on here? Did you have to overcome some of these objections where people weren't sure? A co-working space? What is this? How does this work?
Took off immediately.
Really?
First customer was Toshiba, second customer Bell Atlantic, third one was KitchenAid, fourth, just basically, I can remember those customers today, and some of the customers are still with us.
That's amazing.
You know, so, you know, basically, it sort of hit the mark in terms of what people were looking for. They were looking for property as a service, not as a difficult thing. They just wanted to say, look, I need something that's all finished and ready to use. I really don't want to be in the property business. I want to put five people in Brussels and we look after the rest. That's what companies were looking for.
And then since then, just kept growing, right? You have thousands of spaces now, right?
Well, we're just coming up just over 4,000 now, about 4,200 buildings. And we're opening up about 1,000 a year in 120 countries. So this is a universal problem. It's not just a problem in Europe or in the United States or anywhere. It's a universal problem. Our job is, in fact, to provide an infrastructure. It's not about space. It's about space and everything else we do. Full technology platform, full communications platform, a full support platform with people, help desks, and so on, to support people doing the work that they're doing. Could be small companies, could be the biggest companies in the world. They all want the same thing. They want to have support so that the people using can be much more productive. And it's all for us, when we're looking at things, we're looking at how we can help people's productivity at a lower cost for whoever's paying. And that has been the recipe. We're just doing more and more of it. As more people get to know it, more people want to use it.
Now, how is it net in today's day where you have return to office, you have remote, you have hybrid? How do you see this playing out? Do you feel that hybrid is going to be the de facto way of doing business for the most part moving forward?
Absolutely. Well, it is. I mean, that is proven. It's not. So the narrative's just about catching up today with the reality. And so 2 months ago, you still had people writing about going back to work, back to the office. In the past month, and right up to, there was a McKinsey research piece that came out a few days back. And this is alongside Harvard, Stanford, and many, many other research institutions and the industry itself. Their research is saying that hybrid, which means flexible working, will be at least a third of overall real estate. Now, that makes it a $2 trillion total addressable market opportunity. So it's going to be a huge thing. Now, that realization that it's both permanent and growing is starting to come through. Now, we know, because we're talking to thousands of companies that are making the transition, but it takes time. It's not something that happens overnight. Because remember, every company already has leases. It has commitments. Mm-hmm. It's got to get out of those commitments to go over to something new. But it's happening now at pace every month. As we make the network deeper, get more coverage, it makes it even more useful for companies to make that change. But no, it is permanent. It's going to be a huge part of how people work in the future. It's going to be further enhanced by companies getting much better at managing people who are not all in the same office. It's going to be further enhanced by AI that allows very good productivity analysis to support managers managing people doing jobs to maximize the productivity, maximize the investment in the people. So it's really moving quickly. It'd be further enhanced by IT, very exciting place to be.
All right. Can you indulge me with this for a second? Because you gave me a really, like one of those light bulb moments. So you have all these companies that are paying a crazy amount, New York City, let's say, for example, the rents are astronomical. People don't want to come back into the office. They want to be a hybrid so that they're going to probably cut back. So that's going to be great for you guys, right? That's going to be great for IWG because you're going to see as these leases come up, tell me if I'm wrong, like as these leases come up, they're going to start saying, hey, let's maybe get agreement with, IWG and Mark and let's set it up there. And this way you have that whole hybrid.
That's what's happening. But yeah, okay. we're sort of moving, getting much more focus on the United States and the US markets for investors. Mm-hmm. So we had an investor day in New York City last week, which was very successful. And we started to build up more US investors who like this type of investment. We're a business that's growing very quickly, 20, 30% growth every year. And we're producing cash at the same time. Half of our business is in the US and it's our highest growth market. US, in contrast, is growing at more than 50% each year. So overall, it's from an investment point of view, it's starting to gather momentum. And it's going from a bit like you mentioned earlier, Jack, you were talking about, going back to the office and back to work. I mean, this is, as the narrative moves, people start to realize that there's something else there. They can't see it at the moment. They think somehow that we're a real estate company. We're not. And we don't actually have any real estate. We're actually the middleman, just like Airbnb or like Uber, between two parts of the market, the user and the provider. We work entirely in JV with property owners worldwide to provide the products on the other side to consumers that want to consume more and more. But overall, I think the investment case is starting to be picked up more and people are realizing the scale that it could be in the future.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How does it work now? Because like you've probably seen what's going on in San Francisco, where you had this almost like doom loop of just crime and drugs on the street and everything. And the buildings are empty. Is that maybe long-term a good thing for you? That if somebody, if it could kind of fix it up, clean it up, and that could be amazing, right?
In my experience, Jack, these things go through cycles. So I've been around long enough to see cities go to the top of the pile and then fall right to the bottom. I think I did, having been in the US last week, I think I saw major improvements in New York City with regard to what was on the street. Washington, even more so. Very clean and tidy. And there seemed to be, it seemed to be better organized compared to previous visits. So I think overall, cities are going to have to compete more. I mean, you can't just be a city. Being a city is not enough. Having the transport coming into the city, not enough. You're going to have to focus on two things. It has to be a great place to work and most secure with great amenity. And secondly, you need affordable housing. If you don't have affordable housing, young people, especially young people with families, have to live too far out of the city to get affordable housing and the commute's too long. So this isn't, the battle here isn't between the cities and the workers. It's between the cities, the workers, and the elephant in the room is commuting. That's what people don't want to do. So in cities around the world where we see very affordable housing near the core of the workplace, these cities, no change, very successful. Everything's full. Everyone's happy. If you go to somewhere, you mentioned San Francisco, very expensive and difficult to get into the downtown. It's quite difficult to travel across the bay as well because of traffic problems and so on. So, and also people have to live quite a long way out to get affordable housing. So all cities have to reinvent or focus more on the customer, and the customer that pays the bills is normally the worker, you know, unless it's, you know, Disney, Florida or something. It's the workers that are paying the bills, and it's the companies that are paying the bills. And but you've got to create the right conditions, and the companies will then come and thrive. So I think over the next 10 years, you're going to see a reinvention. I think it's already started in New York. Very, very apparent the difference between my last visit and this one. And that will have to happen all over the United States. Otherwise, as you're saying, the cities will empty out. People just won't want to be there.
So it seems like there's a move towards the suburbs where, I'll give you, you know, a personal anecdote, commuting from where I am. I used to live in Manhattan. And it was pretty easy to get to work. Then you have a kid, two kids, you move to the suburbs, and then you realize the commute, even though the realtor said, oh, don't worry about the commute, you realize, oh my gosh, it's just horrible. It's horrible. There's always a problem. There's always traffic. So that if you have offices in the suburbs, that's just amazing. Because then you go 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. Okay. And then boom. And then, you know, it's so easy. You have your life back.
We're trying to get them in about a 10-minute radius of wherever you would live. Even in the, you know, the where it might be 20 minutes, it would be, you know, I went also week before, I was all around Minnesota, where we're, you know, we're really growing the network in the Midwest, for example. And, you know, where it's in the rural or countryside locations, there'd be a slightly longer travel time, but it's still short. And it's about convenience. So, you know, one of the problems everyone in the narrative keeps saying, well, it's either work from home or work from a city. No, it's actually a lot of people don't want to work from home, but they do want to work locally. So someone like you, Jack, you get an office down the road. You go into the city once a week, once a month, whenever you need to. But you're not sort of obliged to go 2 hours every day or more to use a computer in a building that's inconvenient. You know, you can do that from anywhere. But the fact is, all research shows, whilst it does suit some people to work from home, the vast majority work much better from an office, working with other people, either colleagues or people from other companies, you know, to get that social interaction and to have the break between home and work. It's quite important, you know, sort of socially, mentally, and from a productivity point of view. You know, it's sometimes quite tempting to get that extra half hour in bed and do a meeting in pajama bottoms and shirt and tie. It's sort of, you can't do that if you're going 10 minutes down the road.
Mark, 100% agree with you. I can tell you from firsthand experience, and maybe you can appreciate this as a customer, because I, during the pandemic, I couldn't take being home because, you know, everything was closed down. But I, after a while, and I don't know if you realize this, but here in the US, and I didn't know this because I would be in an office in Manhattan, it's noisier in the suburbs than it is sometimes in the city. You have building, you have the lawnmowers, you have those, like, you know, leaf blowers, and it's nonstop all the time. So I went to not far from me, a place called Short Hills, nice location. And I go there, 10, like maybe 10 minutes at most. I stop, get my coffee, go there. It was quiet. It was nice. Got out of the house. No arguing with my wife and my kids. So I'm telling you, if this helps you, this is like firsthand experience. So I could see and then I decided I'm not going back to Manhattan anymore. This is crazy. Why would I pay, like, the rents in Manhattan just off the charts? It's way cheaper to have, you know, a setup like this where you could drive there 10 minutes and your life is easier. So I see how, like, yeah, I see how this is playing out.
Both as well. So the way our system works is you can get, you know, take a room, take a desk near where you live, but you can use anywhere in the system. Mm-hmm. So you can go to where near where you live one day, maybe a week. The next week you can be in Atlanta, in New York, in Tokyo, if you want. We've got well over 4,000 buildings now, but as a member, you can use all of them. And that flexibility to say, wherever I am, there's somewhere I can work and be productive is, you know, one of the advantages. So it can be local, but it can be also at your destination.
Yeah, it also sounds just like great for the mental health and emotional well-being of people, because that's such a, it's such an important piece for companies now to promote that, because I could just tell you here in the US, people are miserable. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, be prepared. If you kind of move here, Mark, we're out of our minds lately. It's just nuts. So
yeah, it's a universal thing. It's not just the US, actually. But.
So you're seeing it too where you are. It's wild. So by having that, like, less of a commute, right? Knowing you can get there quicker, not having to wrestle with all the technology yourself. It's like one of those things, like, oh, you know, it makes you a little happier, right? It makes you a little bit feeling better.
Look, saving 2 hours a day feels pretty good. Mm-hmm. What you've got to do is fill it, do something else, you know, take up a class in yoga or something, do something. You know, too, and that is the, you know, the issue, I think. But mental well-being is a big issue. It is, you know, one of the most popular things when we ask people, what do you like about being with us? They say, we like the parties, we like the education, we like the social group. Mm-hmm. As we do, we put on events for people. And, you know, that's, they don't say, hey, I had a great desk, or they say, no, actually, the social part was actually I really enjoyed that. Yes, I got my work done as well, but the first thing is always the social part, because just as you say, people are miserable because they probably are spending too much time on their phone. I know I do, head down, not talking to anyone. And then, you know, too much time, you know, in downtime, you know, you've got unlimited TV with Netflix, etc. And then you sort of, but that social interaction is quite easy to miss out. And so I think it's really important, that is. And certainly our customers do. You know, we've got over 8 million users, and that's what they rate highly.
8 million, that's amazing. I don't know. Wow. All right, when you mention parties, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. When you mention parties, so you're not going to go Adam Newman, right, and go off the charts and no, crazy parties.
They're not parties. They're sort of, they're generally cocktails with the theme.
Yeah.
But no, we don't do parties. So, but it's, you know, keeping this, we're very focused on business. So, you know, our customers, you know, the companies paying for this and the individuals using us are serious about business. The social part is about meeting people, and, you know, social is also about business. You learn things, you get inspired, you make business contacts, and so on. All of this is in the mix there. But no, these are not sort of hedonistic parties. It's more like it's a sort of end of day drinks on a Friday.
And I know you have a vineyard. So I guess the drinks will be very nice wine, I suppose. So the parties will be sophisticated with very lovely wine list.
I can't get the wine to everywhere in the world, but I don't make enough of it for every one of our centers. But it depends what it is around the world. But we'll do sort of sake appreciation, whiskey appreciation, these sort of things. So it's themed and, you know, gives something for people to talk about, learn something. We also do educational presentations. You know, that's what people like. And hearing from other companies, a lot of our companies want to stand up and talk about what they do. in their own company. That also, all of that content is makes the going to something a much better experience.
And just if I could tell back to this part, because, you know, there's a theme for a little bit here for digital nomads where you can kind of go and work wherever you want to. And it sounds like, you know, with your company, if let's say I want to go to, you know, Nashville and check it out, I don't have to worry about work. Just get my laptop, go over, right? Go to Nashville, enjoy the music scene.
They're doing it. People are doing it. What we find is we did a series on staycations, they're called in Europe. I don't know what they're called in America. But these are what you can see now is folks, you know, deciding, I want to spend 6 months of the year in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And they do it. And they find somewhere to work locally with us. And they basically rent something and live the life in Colorado or Florida or, you know, wherever in the world, because it's a place to live. I mean, getting away from the winter or getting a new culture. I mean, you can quite literally work from anywhere today in the world, and you can go into an office, meet other people, get immersed into that culture. So it's and quite a lot of people are doing it. We see more and more people in Europe, in the United States, that will be going more towards the coast, but not, you know, to get great places to live, mm-hmm. As opposed to great places to commute from. It's quite a different thing. It opens up the country.
And where do you see it going? I guess it's just the trend is that you're just going to keep opening up more and more locations, I imagine, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're still, you know, if you take the United States, mm-hmm. got about 1,200 locations. We've got 600 under construction. But there's still lots of white space. We think to do the US with a full network is around 20,000 locations. So, you know, we're still not even 10% mm-hmm. of the way there yet. So this, you know, if you think about 20,000 as a number, that's, there's about 20,000 McDonald's in the US, to just give you an indication of what concentrations look like. So this is, as I said at the beginning here, this is about, we call it stepping stones across America. So you should be able to go really in one step, very large steps across America, and be able to work from just about anywhere. That's our future roadmap. And we really see work as being something that's very, very portable. By the way, your office is actually in the cloud today already. Mm-hmm. It's not a physical place. But your ability to work from wherever is convenient is what drives you on. We're doing, by the way, more and more US airports so that you can work right, you know, when you're waiting for your plane.
That's brilliant.
You know, these are small workplaces. Again, very insulated from noise, where you can just do a Teams or a Zoom right in these cubicles. Very, very popular. So, you know, that continuum of work, I mean, we all want to get our work done as effectively as possible, quickly as possible, so that we can get on and do things. We, you know, have pastimes, spend more time with our families, less time traveling. That's, you know, in the end, one of the benefits from technology. I mean, there are technology changes everything. What are the benefits? You know, one of the benefits is the ability to work from wherever.
On a side note, with what happened with WeWork, you know, to go back to it, is that, you know, you don't take relish in somebody else's failure, but is that long-term good for you, because maybe you can get some of those leases, or you don't, because to my knowledge, I don't think there's a lot of other large competitors for what you're doing. So you're kind of running the show.
Well, this is going to be a huge industry. So mm-hmm. we're still, even though we've been doing it for more than 30 years, or I have, it's still right at the beginning of its evolution. We work, you know, basically, right idea, execution was a bit let's call it a bit questionable, mm-hmm. but they're in the right space. But it's, you've got in this business, the execution has to be perfect. And it's a very detailed, very operationally intensive business. It's not something you can just get up and do.
Yeah.
A lot of people make that mistake. But, you know, so WeWork has been a problem for us simply because it obviously has huge following, and we sort of get tied in with people say, are you also in difficulties like WeWork? We're the opposite of WeWork. So our business is very profitable, growing very quickly. They are having to restructure, and we wish them the best in that. You know, it's just sometimes you can get the models wrong.
Did it get frustrating where you see, because this happens a lot in the tech space, in the VC space, right? Where you get this charismatic person who's completely over the top, like a movie character, right? Really just off the charts, get all the limelight, but they'd get the leases at the top and no one could, you know, says anything because, oh, but they're so charismatic, they're so brilliant. And then your 30 years experience hitting away and they suck all the wind out of it. And now it shows like, all right, you're better off having sound advice, what you're saying, right? Really looking at the numbers, making sure you're paying the right, you know, you're not overpaying, you're managing your expenses, you're not having crazy, you know, parties blow, right? So it's just, you know, steady forward. And you notice that too, right? Like these, yeah, these.
There's many, I'm not sure if, you know, Aesop's fables, which were written by someone called Aesop. And there's one that's the tortoise and the hare. Now, the hare was full of it.
Yeah.
He could win the race, didn't practice, went partying, actually, I think, if I remember right. The tortoise just kept on going. So we're not a tortoise. We're going pretty quickly ourselves, but we don't want to make mistakes. So we're investing our own money. So we, you know, we're a public company, but we feel as if mm-hmm. investing our own money in this. So we haven't had, you know, we right at the beginning, I had venture capital money, private equity money. We paid that back double, treble in the early days before we went public. But this is a business about discipline. Like all businesses, you know, it's... you have to focus on the detail. And in particular with business that is as broad as ours is, and with as many customers as we have, you've got to be able to operationally be very strong. So, and, you know, sometimes when, you know, you can see it happens in many industries where you get tortoise and the hare scenarios, where you have one company that's been doing it for a long time, another company looks like mm-hmm. they're going to run right past, but they can end up getting into difficulties by going too quickly and not focusing on the details.
I want to be respectful of your time, but can I ask you just one last question?
Yes.
To go back, you said you had about, when you started, about 10 different businesses. How did you do, did they all work out? Did they fail? Because the reason I ask, Mark, interviewing lots of people like yourself, I find out that a large majority have tried things and failed. And it seems that's just baked into it, you know, where I think a lot of people just view people who are now successful as it was a straight line going up, and they don't realize, you know, you do well, then it not well, then this works, then it doesn't work. And then you iterate and then it works and they don't realize it. And it really struck me by speaking to so many, you know, senior level executives, how much they fail and be open about it. So how with those 10 things, did they work, not work? Did you learn from that?
I learned from all of them. Yeah. Actually.
Yeah.
But they all worked apart from the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work that well. Most of my businesses were always before their time, a bit like IWG is a bit before it was.
Yeah.
We started it pre-internet and pre-mobile phones. But yeah, I mean, but look, I got my money back, and that for me is a failure. But huge learning curve in all the things. So just to point something out, you know, I'm at the end of December here and looking in December, as we always do. We've done all our budgets already, but I'm working through and saying now with our senior team, what have we learned? What are we going to change? So what we're doing is we go back and look at the budget and think about it again and saying, are we, what have we learned? Do we want to really do something different? And so once the numbers are done, you say, right, but how can we improve things? And that sort of, you know, I think no matter how big the business, if you've got to stop and learn from what you're doing and say, and do that really deep review, to say, you know, okay, what's now, what are we going to be like in 3 to 5 years time? What do we want to change? So that, what I'm saying in a roundabout way, the learning process never ends. And by the way, even in 23, we make mistakes as a company. What we, you know, but if you, in my view, if you're not making mistakes, then you're really not trying. And you just got to make sure you make small mistakes and don't do them twice, you know, trying to avoid repetition. And, but business is a learning process. It is always a mountain range. It is never a plane.
This is great. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day. This is awesome. And I really appreciate it because it's for the people who will be watching this, and I'm going to write about this, you know, for Forbes. I love these stories because, you know, you had 10 different businesses, you hit on the one, knocked it out of the park, but you're practical, you're mindful of what you're doing, and it gives people hope. See, these kind of stories, I think, to me, this is what I really like doing because it makes people say, wait a minute, maybe I could do it. You know, it doesn't have to be to the same degree where you are now.
Right. If I may, just one final thing here. A lot of people ask me, family, friends mm-hmm. of theirs, they say, well, I want to get into business. And I said, look, it's very tough. It's much harder. You want an easy life, go get a job. Hard life, start a business. But if you're going to do it, stop talking about it and do it. And do it, if possible, while you're young. And sort of go out and go for it. But you have to be prepared to both learn and to fail a bit. You're probably going to fail before you win, unless you're lucky. Mm-hmm. But your most important thing is get out there and do it. Too many people talk about it and don't do it. And the world needs more entrepreneurial people out there to, you know, to make a better world for the future. It's not just politicians that do that. It's business people that change things for the better, for people, for the planet. You know, they're the people that really are the engine room, and there's always a lack of them, and we need more.
Well, speaking of that, given what you do, are there any ideas for people who are budding entrepreneurs that you would say, hey, here's some areas that seem very ripe for growing and building something and making something happen? Anything that strikes you?
I can't give my ideas away for free. I have about 10 of me. I can't do anything about, but no, there's, look, the opportunities always are right in front of you. So if you're a good entrepreneur, you're looking at what's there, you're trying to find out what's not there. You know, this is, you come back to the invention of the iPhone. Everyone had phones, but they said what people want is a personal device that does a lot more than just be a phone. And let's design a beautiful one as we do it. So there are gaps all over the place. So many opportunities for good entrepreneurial people to find a gap, fill the gap. And that's it. Just look around. Everything you do, every day of your lives, you'll find gaps. Mm-hmm. And they're not all technology gaps. There's very practical things that are out there that people will buy and will invest in. And yeah, I think a lot of the opportunities for me, if I were young, would all be around sustainability, not so much, you know, this is about how to recycle things, how to avoid waste, and, you know, what can be done to, you know, change the, you know, the amount of consumption. How can that be changed? Packaging. My big thing is packaging. You know, how can the world work with less packaging? Huge opportunity for great entrepreneurs here. Some are already doing it, but there's, you know, there's a massive opportunity there using technology to try and make things better in that sense. So look, I could talk about this for another 3 hours, so I'm not going to do that, Jack.
Okay. But
it's all around you, opportunity.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time out. It was great speaking to you again, and I'm so happy to see your success. I'm so glad that you're building up here in the U.S. So thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.